Well, I join everybody else in wishing you a Happy New Year. You know, the year is kind of a fresh start for all of us. And also it's a time when a lot of us make some resolutions. I happen to be one of those. Some people don't care to do that, but for me, I've had a habit of beginning a new year and sitting down and thinking about ways in which I might spend the coming year. Excited about that possibility, and I break it all down into, you know, spiritual, physical, financial, miscellaneous, etc. And I won't share with you all of my New Year's resolutions, but I'm going to share with you this morning a sentence of a New Year's resolution that I think it would be appropriate for all of us. Now, it won't be the one I happen to see on the highway this morning, which says that your best New Year's resolution was don't DUI. I don't much think that many of us here are in danger of driving while intoxicated, so I won't set that one forth. But I will say to you, I came across a quote, not a biblical quote, but I think it is in keeping with the teaching of the Bible, and it's just one sentence. And it was, the quote came from Theodore Roosevelt. And here's what he said: do what you can with what you have where you are. So I thought I would build a sermon around that statement. There are three phrases in it, and so that makes it convenient for me to make three points. And I'm going to do them in reverse order. And I'm going to want you to think a little bit about that. I'll repeat it once again. Do what you can with what you have where you are. All right, let's start off with where you are. Well, I think most of us can geographically locate where we are. We're in the San Gabriel Valley of Southern California. Occasionally, the Lord called people to leave their home and to go someplace else. Abraham responded to that call, as you recall. He was in the Ur of the Chaldees, and God made a great promise to him. And so he left where he was, which was certainly a great act of faith on his part. Moses received a call in the setting of a burning bush. He was in the land of Midian merely as a shepherd, and suddenly God said, I want you to go to Egypt and to rescue the children of Israel. And Moses was a little hesitant at first to respond to that call, but eventually he did, and we know the result. But there are also biblical examples of individuals who simply lived out their Christian life where they happened to live. I'm thinking of the woman Dorcas. Her story is told in the 10th chapter of Acts, and it is said of her that she was devoted to good works and acts of charity. Now, I sense that she lived there in Joppa for some period of time. And you recall how that at her death, the widows were holding up the garments that she had sewn because she was a woman of such good works. And I've known of people in my own life who I thought were really faithful servants in a particular location. You recall that early in my life, in my 20s, my wife and I lived in New Haven, Connecticut, and there I was the minister of the church. And there were a couple of women that I noticed their devotion to the church. They were married shortly after World War II. They had met a couple of servicemen. One was from Texas and the other was from Oklahoma. And they moved with their husbands to New Haven. Now, it so happened that neither of their husbands were members of the church. But there they were, Betty Brown and Peggy Shy, and they were faithful in that church. They were always there. They were always open to good works. And eventually, over a long period of time, They first met a great deal of resistance from their husbands, but eventually those men became members of the church because of the faithful life of those two women. And so where they were doing what they could. And that's certainly what God calls us to do. Geographically, probably not many of us are going to move away. Occasionally a member of ours moves away, like Barbara Altizer and the Rokuses and so forth. But we're counting on the fact that you'll probably be here next year, and I'll probably be here next year, Lord willing, that our life is spared. So just think about where you are, but don't think about it in terms of the place like Pasadena or Altadena or Arcadia. Think about your neighborhood. Think about your job. Think about your family. That's where you are. That's where you can be a witness. You can tell others. I remember a childhood gospel song, "Right in the Corner Where You Are." Probably you remember that song. Well, that's a pretty good statement. Just right in the corner where you are. Think about the opportunities you may have in this coming year in your neighborhood or in your job or in your family. Many of us, for instance, are grandparents, and we can influence our grandchildren and our children, our adult children. They may not always listen to your advice. In fact, I suggest that normally it's best to give advice only when somebody asks for it. They don't normally find unsolicited advice terribly helpful. They have a resistance to that. But you can influence your children and your grandchildren, your neighborhood, your job. That's where you are. The Lord's not calling you to be a witness in some place where you aren't. There's no need of you sort of whining about, well, I'd like to be someplace else. I always struck me that people who found themselves in one place and were telling you about how wonderful the place was that they left and wanted to go back to it, that wasn't a very profitable attitude to possess. That look around. The Lord is calling you to be a witness and a powerful voice where you are. But I might think of one other thing. Where are you chronologically? Well, as I look around this audience, I see that some of you are in the same position I'm in, senior citizens. I one time said to Lucretia not long ago, I said, you know, whatever term they're going to use, elderly, senior citizen, aged, we fall in that category. So what about chronologically? And a lot of times we kind of get to feeling like that we're trapped because we're old and we really don't have much we can do anymore. And admittedly, at times, our body is not quite as able as it once was. We wake up with a few aches and pains that we didn't have earlier in life. But I don't think we're really called upon to retire from God's service at any time in our life. And I want to read to you a passage that I found in Paul's writing that I thought really addresses that issue quite well. Paul was writing, and he said in 2 Corinthians 4, 16 through 18, "So we do not lose heart, even though our outer nature is wasting away, our inner nature is being renewed day by day. For this slight momentary affliction is preparing us for eternal weight of glory beyond all measure. Because we look not at what can be seen, but cannot be seen. For what can be seen is temporary, but what cannot be seen is eternal." So we may be wasting away, as he puts it. And that's the nature of life. We're born into this world, and then mortality is in front of all of us. But wherever you are chronologically, don't give up. Don't simply say, well, my life's over, there's not much I can do. I recently read a book. And it was called Falling Upward by Richard Rohr, and he addresses the second half of life. It's a very fine book. I enjoyed reading it a great deal, except I thought maybe I ought to be reading a book called The Last Quarter of Life rather than The Second Half of Life. But nevertheless, I certainly recognize myself as being in the second half of life. But that is something for us to think of. Where we are, that's what God is calling you to do. Wherever you happen to be, you have a unique opportunity, different than anyone else. But let's move to the second part of that, and that is do what you can with what you have. I've often quoted the statement of Martin Buber, a great theologian and philosopher. And he said, in the judgment day, I'm not worried about the fact that I'll be faced with God saying to me, Martin, why weren't you Abraham? Or Martin, why weren't you Moses? He said, rather that God will say to me, Martin, why weren't you Martin? Why weren't you fulfilling the opportunity and the person you uniquely are? So, Jack, why weren't you Jack? Or I could call out other names in this. That's what we need to think about. What do you have? Well, you say, I have very little. Well, wait a minute. I thought we had a good sermon last Sunday on Barnabas. What was Barnabas? He's not quite the leading figure that, say, Peter or Paul were. But he was one of the members of the beginning church in Jerusalem. And his name really was Joseph, not Barnabas. But he was such an encourager that people changed his name to mean son of encouragement, and he was called Barnabas. Well, what did he do? Well, for one thing, you remember on the day of Pentecost when literally hundreds were baptized, and that was the beginning of the church, that it was there that many of those individuals were Jews who had come together for the Passover. They'd come from many different locations, but once they had experienced salvation, they were staying in Jerusalem, and there was naturally a financial need. Well, what did Barnabas do? Well, it says that he owned a piece of land on the island of Cyprus. He sold that land and he laid the money at the apostles' feet. He encouraged that great work. And once again, in the city of Antioch, he had gone up there because the church was growing in Antioch. And it was a place where many Gentiles were experiencing salvation. And it was at that place that suddenly Barnabas thought, you know, there's a man I think could be of great influence here. He happens to be in the city of Tarsus. He was known as Saul, and later, of course, called Paul, because Saul was his Hebrew name and Paul was his Greek name. And he went to Tarsus and he brought Paul to Antioch. And it continued to flourish. Paul, of course, the intensity, the power that he had was unusual. And soon the Holy Spirit called Paul and Barnabas to set out on a missionary journey. And with fasting and prayer, the church sets them aside. But that was the impulse, was the encourager. So you have or can have the gift of encouragement. When we met back in there and began to talk a little bit in the talk back, various ones of ours spoke up and they happened to remember people in their own lives who had encouraged them. Just the right word at the right time was specifically helpful. I recall when I was a student at Abilene Christian College, I was majoring in Bible, and my plan was perhaps to complete that degree and just go out and find a local church and preach. And Frank Pack, one of the finest Bible teachers I've ever known, came to me and he said, "You know, Jack, you ought to go do some graduate work." Well, that was encouraging to me that he thought that I had, number one, the skills, and I began to think about that. And of course, that's one of the things I did in life. So, encouragement, yes. What do you have? You are impacting people's lives. You have talents. Sometimes talents vary. I recall an individual whom we supported who went to the mission field in Africa, and his job, he was had mechanical skills, so he kept all of the work of that compound going. That it had all kinds of repairs to automobiles and housing and so forth. Now, no one would have asked me to go do that because I don't have that skill. And if you've ever been around me very long, you would discover that. But the truth is, we all have different skills and talents. One of the central concepts of the New Testament is stewardship. Now, what do I mean by stewardship? Paul uses that word when he says it is expected of a steward that he be found faithful. And Paul thought of himself as a steward. He spoke of himself as even being a steward of the mysteries of God, the great unfolding of the good news of Jesus Christ. And Jesus often used the concept of stewardship. You recall it with the parable of the talents. Jesus told a story. He said there was a master who called three of his servants, and he gave each one of them talents, which in this case was money. And he gave one 5 talents, and one 2 talents, and one talent. And then the master went away for a period of years, perhaps. I don't know. He comes back. And suddenly he calls him in. Well, the 5-talent man said, "Well, I went out and worked hard and invested the money, and now I present to you 5 more talents, 10 talents in all." And the master encouraged him. The 2-talent man, the same thing happened. But the 1-talent man said, "Well, I knew you were kind of a hard master, and so I put this talent in the ground. So here it is." And the master said, "Well, you could have at least put it out for interest." And he took the talent away from him. Now, you can get the meaning of the story. The point is that God expects you to use whatever talents you have, whatever skills you have, to his glory. It's true of wealth. Well, you say, "Well, you know, I'm not a person of great wealth." Well, you're a person of some wealth. And our wealth will vary, but God expects us to use our wealth. That's why we took up a collection this morning. And so you may not be Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or some of the richest men in the world, but incidentally, they have given a great deal of it away in a philanthropic way. But whatever you have in the way of wealth, and that I will pass on a little word of encouragement to you. That's also true, by the way, when you pass away, you ought to leave a will behind about how your money is going to be spent. It's unusual how many wonderful deeds have been accomplished by the wealth that people have left behind in their will. So the Lord expects you both to give now and to give in your passing away. So I'll encourage you along that line. But all I'm trying to say is that we ought to be able to analyze. That this is an assessment opportunity that we're talking about here. "Give, and it shall be given unto you." And that's not only money, but time. Jesus said, "Give, and it will be given unto you, pressed down, running over." The generosity is essential to being a Christian. In fact, I've read something that suggests that generosity leads to better health. They've done a study of that, and they've found that the people who are more generous are the people who live longer. There's something about our very nature is that we are social beings. We want to be around people. And the one way that we need to be around people is to be a giving person, to give of your time. I think of a family, and I think of how much I received from my parents because they were generous, not merely in terms of money, but in time and interest. They were individuals who gave to me, and I hope I've given to my own children, but giving to other people, learn to give your time, learn to give your money. Take what you have and be honest in the assessment. The Lord's not expecting you to do something you can't do. You may not have a beautiful musical voice, so that's not your talent. But you have something. You have a spirit. You have a means of encouragement. You have so many ways. So in this new year, let's think about doing what we can with what we have. And then I'm going to turn to the last thing, doing what you can. I'm going to quote once again from Theodore Roosevelt, because I ran across one of these statements. Knowing what is right doesn't mean much unless you do what is right. That's a good thought, you know. Do what's right. Pretension, we're not going to be judged on the basis of what we thought. We were going to be judged on what we do. All the judgment seen is very clear when Jesus said, well, when I was hungry, you gave me to eat. When I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was sick and in prison, you visited me. Well, Lord, when did we see you in this condition? Oh, here's when I saw you in that condition. When you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. I was reading another book called The Book of Joy, which is a conversation between the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. And Desmond Tutu told a story. As you know, he's from South Africa. And he is a bishop in the church there. And so he said there was a woman in one of the black townships, and she looked around, and of course there were a lot of little children that were in great need. Perhaps their parents had died of AIDS. There was great poverty in the area. There was crime. And she had only a three-room house, but she began to take in children. And of course, more and more, she saw the need of these children that in most cases were orphaned. And some other people noticed what she was doing, and they began to bring her food to feed the children. And some even helped build a dormitory so that the children could be helped. So here was somebody of limited means who just looked around and said, there's a need here, and she did something. James says that faith without works is dead. So do what you can. I don't know what it is that you feel you might be able to do, but I think that there's so many examples of that. I think about Gregory Boyle, who was a priest who started the homebody industry. He was a priest in the poorest parish in Los Angeles, East Los Angeles, gang-ridden. And he looked around, and rather than looking at those gang members with disgust and contempt, he began to see maybe there's a way to touch them. And so he began to offer them jobs. He even started a process of tattoo removal because often their bodies were marked with the gang symbol. He, of course, has experienced, unfortunately, the death of some of those people that still were shot or killed in some way in that area. But here was, he looked around, what can I do? So all you want to do in this next year is think about what you can do. Well, some of our members, for instance, are housebound. Some of our members maybe don't feel that, maybe they don't drive anymore. Okay. That does limit your possibilities, but don't sit around and moan about what you can't do. Sit around and think about what you can do. That's really the thing that's necessary. So what I'm thinking about in terms of a New Year's resolution is a pretty simple one sentence. And give it some thought. Do what you can with what you have where you are. I'll say it one more time. Do what you can with what you have where you are. Let's now stand and sing.